Episode 8, The Age of Awakening. Last time on Dragon Shield Kingdoms, Vicar's Conquest. Vicar brought his wounded company to an infirmary, where the single doctor and his two nurse daughters did everything they could for Citrine and the others. Satyrion insisted that they press on to the artist colony of Coltrider, where they found the insane colonists in a catacomb. The colonist bodies burst, giving birth to small dragons made of fire. The dragons burned the colony to the ground before forming a comet in the sky and blasting off. Vicar's company followed the comet to a village called Letson, where they found corpses in the streets. The madness spread to all but Vicar, Volos, and Satyrion. The now insane soldiers were torn apart as more fire dragons erupted from their bodies. Volos, Vicar, and Satyrion ran to the nearby forest where swarms of dragons made of fire attacked, surrounding Vicar in a vortex. But before they could kill him, the spirit of one of the village corpses, a small boy, appeared. He showed Vicar memories, saying he was searching for someone who could find the gate. Satyrion and Volos mounted a final attack on the vortex, and victory seemed imminent. But then the dragons reformed the comet in the sky. It cracked open, revealing it was no comet at all, but a giant dragon egg. The madness took Satyrion and Volos, just as they realized it had originated with the dragons all along. A shield called Vicar. In the sky, the comet cracked open, and living fire took a breath. The first elemental dragon born in 400 years roared. The roar sent shockwaves through Satyrion's body. He wanted to kill, to murder, to slay Vicar and Volos, to feel their skin as he stripped it from their bones. Volos clawed at his cheeks like a rabid animal and shook his head violently. "This is the Black," Satyrion thought, distant, no longer in control of his body as he inched towards Volos. He had one last pocket, and from it withdrew a dagger. He would kill him as the dragon demanded. The dragon made of fire descended on Vicar. Vicar felt something small and hard in his hand. The toy soldier from before. The golden-haired boy appeared again and knelt beside him.
"I will ask you one more time. Do you still wish to die?"
Vicar thought of Valera, of the Gellist's schemes, of the Wyvern and the rest of his company waiting for him to return. He would keep them safe. All he wanted was to keep them safe. "No," he said.
"Ask me to let you live."
"I want to live," Vicar said. "I ask, no, I demand you give me the power to live." The boy's smile widened until entirety of the bottom of his face cracked. He touched the toy soldier in Vicar's hand.
"Remember, you wanted this. I will see you again, Kerasif Vicar."
The toy soldier began to glow, and the little boy disappeared. Impossibly, Vicar stood up holding what looked like the sun, miniature, in his hand. The sun moved up his arm and changed shape, completely enveloping the man in bright light. The sun solidified and formed a gleaming orange shield with unnatural rivulets that seemed to ripple with living fire, as if a dragon had been turned to metal. Yet Vicar held it easily, as if it had no weight. At the top, an orange dragon not unlike the one he faced formed. Vicar and the shield roared as one. The elemental dragon screeched and threw all of its weight atop Vicar, who buckled under the strain. But with reflexes that weren't his, he raised the shield, creating a barrier between him and the dragon.
"Begone!" he commanded, pushing the dragon back with the shield.
The dragon fought, slamming down on the shield again and again with all its fire and fury,
threatening oblivion with every passing second.
That is an order,
Vicar hollered. The shield lit up. The dragon roared as its body was siphoned like a cyclone into the shield until the only traces of it was a swirling orb of light just beneath the shield's surface. The forest, or what was left of it, quieted. The madness was siphoned from Satyrion's body as the dragon was siphoned into the shield. His hands shook as he dropped the dagger inches from Volos's neck. Vicar stood in the spot where the orange dragon had been. His armor had reddened, turning it into a rosy gold that went beyond his armor, creating a shining aura around him. His body was miraculously healed.
It can't be, Volos said.
I think we're way past can't be, Satyrion said. It's a dragon shield.
Come, Vicar said, starting to walk back the way they came. The aura dissipated with each step, like the flickering of a flame almost out. It's a long way back to the capital.
Kerasiv, Volos said.
What? How?
Vicar stopped, knelt down and placed something on the ground. It was the toy soldier from before. Volos, cheeks bleeding from self-inflicted scratches, glanced at Satyrion before following the general. He'd follow him anywhere. That was Volos's way. Satyrion listened to the breeze rustle through the dead forest. Ash fell in clumps and stung his eyes and nose. He took a deep breath, then could not contain himself. He doubled over with laughter. His laughter mixed with his mother's, still ringing in his ears, until all he heard were the maddening laughs of one on the verge of tears. Volos and Vicar did not wait, and so when he got a hold of himself, he jogged to try to catch up, running right past the toy soldier Vicar had left as a marker for where miracles came back into the world, where dragons woke. Stolen in the night. Citrine lay completely still, her entire body racked with pain. She could not tell if a sheet had been laid over her lower half or an anvil, such that the slightest pressure felt like hot pokers going through her eyes. For all she knew, they might have been as she found she could not muster the strength to open her eyes and see for herself. She could hear, though, when she wasn't screaming internally. She heard the doctor speak with his nurses, and in moments of lucidity surmised that she was in an infirmary somewhere with the other soldiers from Vicar's company.
Where is Turi?
The thought came over and over again like lightning shaking her skull. She knew she was dying, that the doctor could do nothing for her, that the Dragi, if they were still there, could not heal the wounds she had inflicted on herself. This was the end, and all she wanted was to see Turi one more time.
When had that happened?
She wondered.
When did he become so important to me?
Over the next several hours, she slipped into and out of consciousness. She dreamt. She dreamt of her mother, sitting with Andros in the Jet Fortress waiting for word. Her mother would try to force Vicar to keep her safe as he promised. She would fail. Citrine dreamt of the tavern where she taught Turi how to use copper dust properly. She dreamt of hidden moments stolen in the shadows of wagons, between late nights turning to early mornings. Secret keeping and secret kisses shared between her and Turi, and the overwhelming joy they brought. Joy. To think such a thing had ever existed for her. It was laughable. She almost laughed out loud.
Doctor!
Citrine heard one of the nurses call.
She's trying to say something.
The doctor came over and placed two fingers on her neck to check her pulse. He may as well have run her through with a great sword. She tried to scream but couldn't.
Just discharge, he said. It doesn't mean anything. Grab a rag and clean her mouth up.
But there's more of it, the nurse said.
Do as I say, the doctor said.
The rag, too, was agony. The Gellists had wanted her to suffer for her powers, to make some kind of cosmic exchange with whomever granted them to her in the first place, as if she had asked for them, as if she wanted the power to kill so easily. If only they knew. She would gladly give her powers back if it meant never having killed those men in Sylvania or suffering this pain now.
I should have let them take me.
Perhaps you'll get your chance to correct that particular error.
Who is that?
She shouted wordlessly to the voice in her head. Someone was talking to her telepathically. But who? And why? Sleep now, little Trini, the voice said. We'll see each other soon. The nurse came over with a cup of water, tried to get Citrine to drink, but tripped and dropped it. The cup clattered from her neck to her torso, and the water flew like scalding lava across her arms. Citrine passed out from the pain. She dreamt again, this time of only one thing. A man in off-white robes standing at a balcony banister, overlooking a chasm where others like her, were chained. They were screaming. The man smiled and looked at her. Right at her. He burst into white-hot flame until his body disappeared, his robes eviscerated, and all that remained was the black imprint of his smile and wicked eyes against the lustrous white. Boom, she thought, seconds before an explosion rocked the infirmary. Saturion could not wait to get back to the infirmary to see Citrine. With any luck, she'd be awake. Maybe the drag-eye had succeeded in closing the holes all over her body. He wanted to hold her, to tell her all that had happened. He wanted to talk to her about the dragons, but most of all, he just wanted to make sure that she was safe. His hope shattered as the explosion rocked the distance.
What's that? Saturion gasped. Dragon?
Volos asked. No, Vika said. No, I don't think so.
Saturion, do you have any more dust?
Saturion? You mean me?
Answer the question, Vika posited.
Fresh out, Saturion said, noting that he and General Vika were on a first-name basis.
I suppose that's what you get for trying to save a guy. Never mind. Back to the matter at hand, Saturion thought. Do you think it's coming from the infirmary? Is it Citrine?
I do not know, Vika said.
He unsheathed his sword and unscrewed the jewel-encrusted hilt. It swung open on a small latch. Inside were several thin vials of dust.
Holding out on the company, General?
Saturion asked, eyeing the dust.
This is my emergency store, he said, selecting the blue dust. I saw you use this to leap onto the rooftops in the village. Can you use it to speed our pace?
Absolutely, Saturion said.
Are you sure? Volos asked.
No, Saturion said. But let's do it.
Vika handed him the vial. Saturion uncorked it and dropped half of its contents into his hand. He closed his eyes and thought of Citrine, thought of their lessons together. His heart beat a little faster as he blew. The dust swirled from his palm, circled the men's feet, and beat in tune with his heart. Saturion leapt into the air and covered three times as much distance as if he were walking with that single bound. Volos and Vika followed suit.
What are you doing?
Citrine thought, hands all over her body, lifting her. She felt like a baby left alone in storm waves as she rocked back and forth. So much darkness, so much fear, so much pain.
We got her,
she heard someone say.
Good. What do we do with the others?
Burn them all.
Heat. Screams. The black bliss of unconsciousness took her again. From a mile up, Saturion could see the infirmary burning.
No!
He landed in a huff and flung himself the last half mile to where Vicar and Volos had already landed and stood facing the flames. Four figures in off-white robes stood unperturbed in the fire. Gelists. But something was wrong.
What is this? Volos said.
After all that the three had seen, the Dark Riders turned into creatures, the colonists used as incubators, and the rebirth and capture of the first true dragon in four centuries, Saturion thought nothing could surprise him. He was wrong. As the blue dust waned, Saturion saw that these people had been altered, changed, mutated. The flesh on their faces had been hacked off with the ragged edges of rusty hatchets. One was missing an arm, and in its place grew a whip made of vines, seemingly impervious to the heat. Another had two malformed wings growing from his back and razor-sharp teeth spinning in a circle in the hole where his nose used to be. The third's hands and feet were made from gushing water that expanded and contracted at will, while the last seemed to be half-shadow, half-corporeal. They each had tremendous scarring all over their bodies and seemed to relish the heat of the dead infirmary.
"Taken your belief of pain before power a bit far, haven't you?" Vicar called. Saturion looked from Vicar to these. What were they? Creatures? People? Cultists. Was Vicar implying that these cultists had done this to themselves? That they had hurt themselves as payment of some kind for the mutations they saw now? It didn't matter. Those were questions for another time. Only one question mattered. One question Saturion needed answering. Where is Citrine?
Gone, the cultist made of shadow said. But not where you're going.
The four attacked. Volos crossed his arms, and the umber dust inlaid in his armor glittered before activating, providing him with reinforced strength and durability. The gelist with the vine for an arm flung him like he was a rag doll anyway. Saturion yelped as the shadow man disappeared, reappearing in front of him, shadow arm turned into a scythe. He swung at Saturion's legs, but Saturion leapt just in time, a small burst of residual dust lending him a little extra air. It dissipated completely as he landed atop the blade. The shadow gelist grunted as he transformed the blade from corporeal to shadow, causing Saturion to trip and fall to the ground. The woman with hands and feet made of water and the winged gelist launched themselves at Vicar. He stood, calm and strong, and lifted the dragon shield to meet the gelists as they struck. A wave of energy reverberated out from the point of contact. Saturion could actually see it distorting the world around them as it echoed. Vicar pushed them back with the shield. It covered nearly half of his body. The dragon head near the top came alive and roared as he pushed. The shadow gelist and vine arm leapt off Saturion and Volos to attack Vicar from behind. With his free arm, Vicar unsheathed his obsidian blade and cut them in half before they landed. With a mighty heave, Vicar pushed the winged gelist and the amputee off balance, and with a calculated stroke, lopped the winged man's head from his neck and rammed the pointed edge of his shield into the stomach of the amputee, pinning her to the ground.
You do not have my permission to die! Vicar roared as the pinned woman coughed up blood. What is Tarantos planning? Answer me!
Volos and Saturion looked at each other.
Tarantos?
The woman's laughter broke as she convulsed.
The gate rises,
the woman said through blood-splattered words.
Gale be good. The gate shall rise.
What gate? Where did they take the wyvern? Who did this to you? How? Tell me what you know, Vika demanded.
The woman mustered a smile and spit a glob of bloody saliva at him. She shook as if hypothermia had set in. Her skin turned blue as she died.
Vika slammed his fists into the top of the shield like sledgehammers. It dug deeper into the dead woman's pelvis. Damn it! He roared.
Give him space, Volos told Satyrion. See if you can find any survivors.
Satyrion nodded. Just then, he would have given anything to escape Vika. His rage was palpable, and its gravity immense, like standing next to a black hole.
Satyrion looked for what he could find. It wasn't much. The charred corpses of the doctor and his nurses. Many other unidentified bodies, likely the members of Vika's company they had left behind. Most of their supplies were left untouched, except for one wagon that was conspicuously missing. He waited until Volos went to Vika first. If Volos was there, it might mean Vika had calmed down.
They took the dust wagon, Satyrion said as he rejoined the others. Of course they did, Volos said. Worth a fortune, that was. They won't sell it, Vika said.
He removed his helmet and wiped sweat from his brow. Vika's skin had changed color. He used to have a fair complexion, but now his skin had tanned. More than that, it appeared his skin had been burnt with fire that lived now underneath the first layer of skin, giving him flesh that was at once bronze, orange, and crimson. His golden hair now had the colors of flame too. Satyrion contained a gasp.
She said the gate rises, Vika continued.
It is not the first time that I have heard mention of a gate.
He remembered the little boy's spirit. What had it said?
I am searching, the boy said, for someone who can find the gate.
Gate? What gate? Volos said.
Vika shook his head.
I don't know. I don't know.
You said Tarantos, Volos said, changing the topic before the black hole inside Vika opened up and swallowed them all. You think this is his doing?
It was not a question. Vika nodded.
Who?
Satyrion asked.
The governor of the White, Volos said.
But shouldn't you know that?
Satyrion shrugged. Nurgrind was governed by the Green Governor, and he only knew that because she visited once when he was small and gave all the children chocolate. He wouldn't have been able to pick her out of a line.
What does he want with the wagon? With Citrine?
Not clear, Vika said, wrenching the shield up and out of the woman Galist's body.
Satyrion noted how Vika had gotten used to the shield so quickly, despite its girth and weight. He moved like it had always been part of him and did not bother wiping the blood and guts off. The shield seemed to feed on it, to glow slightly more radiant around the body parts. Satyrion shut his eyes tight and opened them to make sure he wasn't seeing things. Then,
"You think they're gonna kill her?" Satyrion asked. "Make a show of it for the Gellist followers?"
"No," Vika said. "Tarantos wants her alive. Otherwise they would have killed her here."
Volos said, "Before you left to meet me, you wrote a note. What was it that you said? That the Gellists were up to something. And the fire
burns from within the house," Vika said.
A chill ran up Sartirion's spine.
He knew all about fire burning inside houses. He waited to hear his mother's maddening laughter ringing in his ears, now a daily occurrence, but it did not come. Half-formed words, a memory distant and foggy, came floating back to him.
Vika eyed the shield on his arm. Dragons and dragon shields. The mythical made real.
Vika seemed distant, contemplating deeply, as if trying to remember something from long ago. Something that evaded him, but could hold the key to understanding everything.
"The gate rises," he said.
Satyrion heard his mother's voice reciting a nursery rhyme she used to tell him.
"The worm gate sleeps underground, underground, underground. The worm gate sleeps underground, my crowned baby. Dust and brick beneath a bow, beneath a bow. Dust and brick beneath a bow, my crowned baby."
Blood drained from Satyrion's face. Dragons and dragon shields. The mythical made real.
"What is it?" Bolos asked.
"Speak, Jester."
"I know what they're after," Satyrion said. "They're trying to raise the Worm Gate."
"The Worm Gate," Volos said, scoffing.
"That's impossible. It's a legend, nothing more."
"Like how dragons and dragon shields are legendary," Satyrion said,
puffing out his chest and pointing righteously to the orange dragon shield on Vicar's arm, still trailing small intestine.
"I'm telling you, it's real and the Gaelists have found it. To raise it, though, that would require an incredible amount of dust. More than any normal dust crafter could handle. More than a wyvern, even."
"More than a single wyvern, perhaps," Vicka said.
"But a dozen? 2 dozen?
"You're not seriously considering this," Volos said to the general.
"Talk sense, Vicka."
"We can't let him raise the gate," Satyrion said. "It was hidden for a reason. You have to warn High Mage Valera. You have to get her to understand, to marshal the mages, to fight Tarantos and the Gaelists," Satyrion said. "I'll go find Citrine."
"And do what?" Volos said. "You're nothing but a jester."
Anger fled in Satyrion's eyes.
"Oh, I'm much more than a jester. Do you need me to show you?"
He let his mask fall away to reveal the rage underneath. Volos took an involuntary step back.
"Enough," Vicka said. "Citrine is one of my charges. From the looks of it, she may be the only one left. Satyrion, can you save her?"
The sound of his name calmed him. The fiery rage returned to embers.
"Yes," Satyrion said.
Vicka stared at him hard, then nodded.
"Good. Do not let her die."
"You can't be serious!" Volos roared.
"He loves her, Volos," Vicka said. "He will do what it takes to save her. You and I are the only ones that can speak to the High Mage and get her to act."
"You're assuming the Jester's theory is correct." "You know the Jester is right here," Satyrion said. "And I am right."
"How do you know? What if you're not?"
"You would have the High Mage and the military start a war with the governors over a hunch?"
"The Gaelists started this war," Vicka said.
"The Gaelists are not the governors."
"I fear you have been gone from Sylvania for too long," Vicka said. "Now they are one. But if we are fast, and we are lucky, we may still find allies in the Guild of Court Mages. Assuming they have not thrown their allegiance in with the Gaelists already."
Volos stared agape.
"That can't be."
"We do not have time to argue amongst ourselves. Satyrion, you will follow the trail to catch up with the Gaelists. Volos and I will take a shortcut back to Sylvania to meet with the High Mage."
"But sir," Volos said, "the democracy, it cannot fall, can it?"
"Anything can fall," Satyrion said,
a murder of crows cawing above, circling, ready to prey on the flesh of those perished in the flames.
"Indeed," Vicka said. "We have our orders. Let's go."
Vicar's Conquest. Written by Ian Spiegel Blum. Narrated by Dave Jackson. Produced by Johan Barnson. Special thanks to Latoya Inerity and Elizabeth Nowak. Story editor Ryan Gomez of www.magicarcanum.com. Based on Dragon Shield characters and products. Available wherever great games are sold. With special thanks to all our Alpha readers who made this project possible.